We're holding on the top of Kuf Yud Amr Aleph. Continuing with the Machloikasin of Admon and the Chachamim, we went through five of them already, so now we're up to number six. Mishnah says, Hamotzi Shtar Choy Vachaveri. If Reuben brings out a Shtar Choy against Shimon, so it shows that Shimon owes him X amount of money. Vahalah Hotzi Shemachalay Zasoda. In turn, though, Shimon brings out a shtar in Beis Din that says that Reuven previously sold a field. So now he's saying it has to be that your shtar that I owe you money must be that I already paid it, or it must be that it's forged. Why would you have sold me a field when instead, if you had the opportunity to collect the money from me, why wouldn't you have done that? The fact that you didn't, the fact that instead you took the money and sold me your field shows that I don't actually owe you that money. So therefore, whatever you're claiming is in that shtar, the shtar has already been paid off, or the shtar is forged or whatever. Which, by the way, for him to claim the shtar is forged is not so simple. If there was a kiyum on the shtar, if the edim have already been verified by, if the signatures have already been verified by Beis Din, then not necessarily would he be able to claim mezuyaf. But one possibility is, I think the Pnei Yeshua explains that Rashi might say that we're talking about, let's say, one of the, there's five different ways of being Mekayim Ashtar. One of them is that you have other people who recognize the Adam's signatures. So he might have a valid claim to say, you know what, they didn't realize it was a very expert forgery, and therefore they didn't realize that it's not the signatures of the people who they think it is. Anyway, so what happens over here? Admon Omer Yocholu Shiyomar. So Admon says, exactly that Shimon can say, Ilu Hayisi Chayev Lacha, if I really owed you money, like you're saying, like you, Reuven, are holding a shtar that says that I owe you money, if I really was Chayev, morning, Ali, Hayo Lacha, Li Porer Shachok, Shmachar, to the Asasada, then you should have been paid back when you sold me the field. So in other words, when it came the point, when I gave you money for the field, you should have said, oh, well, in that case, this is to pay off that debt. You didn't do that. Therefore, says Admon, Shimon has every right to say that this that you're saying that I owe you money from before that is already paid off or is forged or whatever. But the Chacham say that no. On the contrary, we can say that Reuven was very smart to sell karka to Shimon under these circumstances. Now he has something to be able to take as a mashkin if necessary. If it was just based on the Talplin, then Shimon could always hide his metalklin and claim that he doesn't have them, that he's bankrupt or whatever. Now, like this, Reuven figures, you know what? Now I have an opportunity. Now I'll bring out into the open that Shimon actually has money, and therefore that he goes and buys this karka. And now, when it comes time to collect the debt, then I'll be able to collect it from him that way. Then I'll be able to collect that karka rather than having to worry about that Shimon might say I don't have any money.
Chachamim said that he manufactured the sale of karka in order to claim afterwards that he was paid off.
No, not to claim that he was paid off, but on the contrary, so he has a guaranteed place to get paid from. In other words, like this,
the other one was paid off.
No, that's the thing. So we're talking about that Reuven is saying you owe me money. Shimon is saying you sold me a field. So Shimon is saying there can't possibly be, Reuven, that I owe you money. Otherwise, why did you sell me the field? So now the Chachamim are saying, because Reuven can answer back, the reason I did that is, so now when the loan comes due, I have a way to collect from you, namely that I'll be able to take that karka. Whereas if I hadn't done that, then, and you only have metalklin, then I might not have been able to, because you'd be able to, you'd go and claim that you don't have any metalklin.
But he still has proved he owns the field.
Right now, Shimon owns the field, but the point is, Reuven is going to bring out a shtar once the shtar is validated, and once Reuven can show that it wasn't paid, then he's going to be able to take this field and payment of it, and therefore he's able to get. In fact, actually, Rishonim bring from the Yerushalmi.
But how does he prove he owns?
How does he prove he owns with any shtar that it wasn't paid off? Same way as proof with any shtar, whether it is that you have Adim, for example, you could have Adim that at one point that Shimon admitted in the presence of Adim that he still owes the money. Or you could say just because you could say, of course, you still owe me the money. Otherwise, how is it that you don't have a receipt? In some cases, we could make him swear, maybe not a Shavua Minatoda because it's Kofa Hakol and because it involves land, but maybe Midrabanan. So there's various ways. The Ran, by the way, brings that even if Shimon has other land, so in that case, so he already has another piece of land. So therefore, so maybe that argument falls away. Nevertheless, Reuven still has a valid claim to say that this way, instead of having to collect half my debt from one piece of land and half from another, I prefer to sell you a piece of land the size of the entire debt. So that way, if you default on the debt, I have where to collect from. So the Gemara, though, asks, my time at Rabbanan, why are the Chachamim saying that a person might do such a convoluted thing? Shapir kama Admon. Doesn't Admon have a valid point that if he was going to be paid back, he could be paid back with the money itself rather than having to sell karka and then have to go through that whole rigmarole? So the answer is, but Astrid, it depends what the circumstances are. But Astrid, Yabi, Zuzi, Vahoda, Kospi, Shtara, in a place where the local minhag is that first, when somebody wants to buy land, first he has to give them money. Then they write the shtar, Kula Amale, Pligi, Dimatsi, Amale, Hoyla, Lachal, Freya, Strocha. Then everyone will agree with Admon's logic that we can tell him, why did you do that? After all, what are we talking about? The money first changes hands, then the shtar is written. Well, very well. If Reuven really is owed this money, like he claims, then as soon as the money reaches his hands, he should be saying, oh, this pays off the debt. And then things should stop right there. And the fact that he didn't shows that he agrees that he's not actually owed that money. So in a place like that, then yes, the Chachamim would agree with Admon. Everybody would agree that if now later on Reuven says, you owe me this money, then Shimon has every right to say, well, why didn't you deal with it when I was selling the field? Ki pligi ba astra de kasvi shtara bahadur yasvi zuz, bahadur yavi zuz. The machlokas is in a place where they do the other way around. First, they write the shtar. First, they write the bill of sale. And only then does the money change hands. So now becomes the question, if Reuven's claim is true and he is owed this money, why didn't he deal with it at the time? Admon savui boila la mimsa maidah. So Admon says, you know what? If he really was owed this money, then, and he's doing it, as we said, in order that he should have a guaranteed place to collect his debt from, that now he'll say, now Shimon has karka, and therefore I can take it from him to pay off the debt. Well, then what he should be doing is when he sells the property to Shimon in the first place, he should be giving a moidah, like we talked about yesterday. He should be giving notice in front of Adim, but ahead of time, that I'm not actually selling this field because stam, a transaction between people. I'm selling it for the specific purpose of making sure that in the future I'll have where to collect my debt from Shimon. And the fact that he didn't do that, says Admon, means that he's not actually owed that money. V'rabbanan Sabri, meanwhile, the Chachamim hold, similar to what we had in the previous Mishnah, that he can't, or in an earlier Mishnah, it was two Mishnayos ago, that he might not want to make a moidah because he's going to think to himself, chavra chavra islay, your friend has a friend, but chavra de chavra chavra islay, the friend of your friend has a friend. In other words, when a moidah is given, word of it tends to get around. And then what's going to happen is Shimon is going to say, I don't want to buy that field. If he finds out that, in fact, Reuven is selling it to him only because Reuven is claiming that he, Shimon, owes him money and he wants to use it as a vehicle for paying off, for getting the debt paid off, then Shimon is going to say, well, of course, then why should I waste my money on buying a field from Reuven? So therefore, Reuven may not want to do a moidah, and therefore the Chachamim say that the fact that he didn't make a moidah doesn't mean anything. Which Tosfos, by the way, points out that in the earlier case, when we had the case, when we had a different case involving a moedah, we had a case where there's a field where Reuven claims was stolen from him and is now in the possession of Shimon. And at one point, that field was used as a boundary marker for a different field during a sale. And either we said that either Reuven is an aide on such a shtar, or Reuven himself wrote such a shtar to sell a field to somebody else, whatever. Then we said everybody would agree that he should have made a moedah. What we said was, to be exact, we said if the case was that he claims the field was stolen, now if Shimon is selling the field back to him, Reuven himself, then he doesn't want to do a moedah, because then, he's afraid that word of it will get around and Shimon won't want to sell him the field, and after all, he wants his field back. Even though he's saying it was stolen from me, he's saying, you know what, fine, later on I'll deal with that. But for right now, at least the field is up for sale. Let me grab the opportunity. So there we said everybody agrees with that concept. Tosfos points out, why is it that now, all of a sudden, we have that itself as the subject of a machlokas admon and a chacham? And the answer is, Tosfos says, because after all, here you have a much greater level of hoidah, where he's actually where you're using it as a boundary marker for another field, fine. It kind of suggests that you accept that that field legitimately belongs to the other person. But here, where he has an actual signed and sealed shtar that says you sold me this field, then therefore we can consider it much more of a hoidah. So in this case, it's much more like a hoidah, and that should presuppose that we should have had a moedah in order for us to be clear that that hoidah is not a real hoidah. So that's the sixth machlokas of Admon and the Chachamim. The seventh machlokas, says the Mishnah, Shnaim shoitziu shtar choyv ze al ze. Suppose that now you have two people brought out a shtar chayv one against the other. So in the previous case, Reuven says, Shimon, you owe me money. Shimon has counterclaiming to that a shtar that says, Reuven, you sold me a field. Here what you have is Reuven has a shtar that Shimon owes him money, and Shimon has a shtar that Reuven owes him money. And it could even be, Rashi says, that the two debts are equal.
And what about the dates?
What?
What about the dates?
The dates we're going to get to in the Gemara, so wait. Admon Omer. So Admon says that each one, that the second one, the one with the later date, has a valid claim saying, if I really owed you money as your shtar claims, then how is it that later on you borrowed money from me? You should have said, you know what, pay back the debt that you claim you owe. The fact that not means, again, that I'm claiming that your shtar is forged or it was already paid back or whatever.
Or the time you had to pay back was 3 years.
So we're going to talk about dates. We're going to get to dates in the Gemara. Wait. The Chum say each one can collect his shtar, and that means, Rashi says, even if the two debts are equal in size, we're not going to say that he gets to keep it to pay off the milveh. Beis Din is going to go and take and deal with nechasim for each one of them. Now, we're going to deal with in the Gemara, we're going to start with a related machlokas, a related but not identical machlokas of Amoraim, and then we're going to relate that back to our mission.
Beis Din wouldn't take both shtars, just rip them both up and finish.
No, so that's what we're going to discuss. Wait. So Itmar. So we have a discussion of Amoraim in a related case. Shnayim sheitziu shtar choyv ze al ze. If two people take out a shtar choyv one against the other, now we're going to see that that's not. We're going to see that now that sounds like the same case as our Mishnah, but we're going to see soon that it's actually a little bit different. So Rav Nachman is ze goyve ve ze goyve. Rav Nachman says each one of them can collect because each one has, assuming that Beis Din verifies the signatures and verifies that the debts aren't paid off, et cetera, et cetera. So then each one can collect his own. Rav Shesha sama hafuchi matauta lomali, whereas Rav Shesha says, why should we flip around the bags? Rashi explains that matauta are big leather sacks that they use to carry merchandise. If you have two sacks that are of equal weight, what would be the point of switching one to the other, of switching the right to the left and the left to the right? You're ending up with the same amount, you're carrying the same amount of weight and the same distribution. So in other words, it's a figure of speech, meaning why would we bother taking from Reuven to give to Shimon and taking from Shimon to give to Reuven when they're going to end up exactly the same as they began? So Ella, Ze'o Mishaloi, Ze'o Mishaloi. So rather, Rav Shesha says each one Each one stays in his property. You have to realize, by the way, first of all, a major difference right away between the case of Amiroyim that the Amiroyim are arguing about and the case of the Mishnah. In the case of the Mishnah, one of them is claiming that the other one's shtar is forged or paid off or whatever. He's saying, I bechlal don't owe you that money. In Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes' case, they both agree they owe each other the money. They both agree the other one's shtar is valid. But the question now is, what do we do? Does Beis Din actually deal with the situation, or do they say each of you stays in what you have? So now we're going to work out. Now we're going to work out why, even according to Rav Nachman knows the concept of Apuchi Matarta. So why, according to him, would there be a case where Beis Din is going to deal with it and collect from Reuven to give to Shimon and vice versa?
And this Mishnah that we're talking about.
So in the Mishnah we're talking about, they're actually arguing where Reuven says, you owe me money, and Shimon says, you owe me money, I don't owe you.
Oh.
That's the difference. Whereas Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes, one of them is saying, the other one, to the other one, your claim is false. In Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes' case, there's no such thing. They both agree that each other's claims are valid. So the Gemara says, now, we know that when it comes to a Baal Chayv collecting, we know that if he's collecting from land, we know that Midaraisa, he's entitled to collect only from Ziburis. No, a Nizik collects from Idis Midaraisa. A Nizik collects from Idis, from the best quality land, Daraisa. Midaraisa, Baal Chayv, Gemara explains in a few places, would collect only from Ziburis. The Chachamim were concerned about Ne'ilas Delas Bifnei Loivin, that then the door is going to be locked in front of borrowers. Nobody's going to want to lend money if he knows that all he's going to get for it, that he might only get Ziburis. Right. So therefore, the Chachamim instead said that he can get Bainis. Now, you have a Machloikas in Bava Kama, which is now going to drive our Sugya as well, whether, when we say Bainis, what do we mean? Bainis relative to what? Do we say b'shaloi hein shamin? We consider what's the bainanus within his own fields. So in other words, for example, if he has idis bainanus and ziburis, fine, okay, bainanus is bainanus. But what if he only has some of them? Do we say then that we do the bainanus relative to his own fields? So that might come out objectively ziburis or objectively idis even. Or do we say b'chole alma hen shaman? Do we say we go according to what the world considers bainanus? So that's going to be the subject of our sugya. So. Dekore alma idis v'idis beninus v'beninus ziburis v'ziburis. Everybody would agree, both amiroyim, that if both of them have only idis, or both of them have only beninus, or both of them have only ziburis, vade hafuchi matartahu, then no question, that's just considered like flipping around the bags, and there's no sense in it. So then both Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes are going to agree that Beis Din tells them, leave us out of it. You guys each have an amount. The debts are equal. Everything's equal. So therefore, leave us out of it. And there's no reason to take anything away from anybody. You're not ending up with anything different than you did before.
The problem is one saying that yours is false. There's
a problem. No, that was in the Mishnah. Keep in mind, in the Mishnah, one of them saying that. Oh. In the Gemara, that's why we start off the Gemara, Itmar. We're not saying this is relating to the Mishnah. Eventually, we're going to use our Mishnah to as a proof one way or the other in this din. But the actual din that we're dealing with in the Gemara, usually when the Gemara begins Itmar, it means we're starting a new machloikas that is not directly continuing from the Mishnah.
Somewhere else.
But yeah. So now, the question is, if one of them has Beninus and the other one has Ziburis. So now, Rav Nachman Sava Zeg Goyva Vezeg Goyva. So Rav Nachman is going to say, each one of them now is entitled to collect. Because he says, how do we figure what's considered Beninus for our purpose? We say that we go according to what's Beninus within his own Nechos. So in other words, if he only has one Beninus and all the other ones are Ziburis, then we say a Baal Chayv cannot collect from that one piece of Beninus because to him, that's his best that he has. And for a Baal Chayv to collect from that would be Idis, and a Baal Chayv can't collect from Idis unless there's nothing else. Therefore, the Baal Chayv would wind up collecting Ziburis. So now, how do we work it out, says Rav Nachman? Osi Baal Ziburis for Gavalil Beninus. So now what happens is that the one who until now owned only Ziburis. So now you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven owns only Ziburis. Shimon owns Beninus. So now Reuven is first going to collect his debt, and then thereby he's going to collect the Beninus from Shimon to have a Gabei Idis, which relative to Reuven's properties, that one piece of Beninus is Idis. So now it's proof. Now it's safe against the Baal Chayv. A Baal Chayv can't collect that one because to him that's Idis. So therefore, Baal Chayv can collect only from Ziboris. So the Osahu, the Shokol Ziboris. When Shimon comes to collect his debt, he's going to be able to collect only from Reuven Ziboris because relative to Reuven's properties, that is the Beinimus. So therefore, so it comes out, according to Rav Nachman, you have an actual practical outcome from this, that we do it in that order, is that Reuven winds up with Beinonis, where before he had only Ziboris, and Shimon winds up with a piece of Ziboris in place of his Beinonis of Reuven. So therefore, so Rav Nachman says, there is reason for Beis Din to deal with that in order to make that arrangement. When Rav Shesha says, what's the point of flipping around the bags, meaning Kasava B'shel Kol Adam Hen Shamin, he says that we don't consider Beinonis relative to what properties Reuven has or what properties Shimon has. We go according to the general definition of Beinonis. Well then, what's going to happen? So now, fine, Reuven is going to collect the Beinonis from Shimon. What's going to happen now when Shimon comes to collect his debt? What is he going to take? Hahu Beinonis to Nafshei Kashukel. He's going to take right back the Beinonis that he gave to Reuven. So therefore, if Shesha says, we're going to end up right back where we were, and therefore there's no need for Beis Din to deal with it. Okay. The question then is, Ulo Rav Nachman, my chozis to osi baal ziboris bereisha. Okay, but according to Rav Nachman, why should we assume that Reuven, who until now owned only the ziboris, why should we assume that he is coming to Beis Din first? Lacy baal beinonis bereisha. Why don't we instead say that the one who owns the beinonis, Shimon, should come first? The ligbi ziboris, he will collect ziboris because that's all that Reuven has at that point. The lahed of a ligbi niale. And then Reuven would be taking right back that Ziboris. And then again, we're back to where we were. So why is Rav Nachman assuming that we do it in an order such that now we wind up trading Ziboris for Beinonis? It could equally well be that we deal with that Beis Din is gonna deal with their claims in the opposite order. In fact, Shimon himself is gonna realize, you know what, if I don't go to Beis Din first, Shimon is gonna think to himself, if I go to Beis Din first, then I'm going to end up a loser. Let me better not go to Beis Din first. So why are we assuming that it's going to have to be in that order such that we're going to wind up like that? So the answer is Lloyd Sricha de Kodim Tabe. Okay, so we're talking about that. In fact, he did go and was Teveya first. So Reuven, in fact, did go and brought his claim to Beis Din first, and therefore now Beis Din deals with one case at a time. So therefore, so now. In fact, we usually have a rule. Tosfos mentions called Niskokin Lateveya Tchila. When you have two people come to Beis Din, in a normal case where Reuven is claiming and Shimon is not counterclaiming, or Shimon is counterclaiming something, but he's not claiming that Reuven owes him, he's claiming something else, he's claiming I paid it, or what have you, usually the rule is Niskokin Lateveya Tchila. We first listen to the arguments of the Teveya, or the plaintiff. Well, in this case, if Reuven brings the case to Beis Din first, then yes, Beis Din is going to have to hear him out first. So therefore, at the end of the process, then again, Shimon is not denying that he owes Reuven the money. He's just saying, on the other hand, Reuven owes him an equal amount in return. So, but he agrees that Reuven's shtar is valid and hasn't been paid off, etc. So, in that case, if we say Mishaloi Hein Shomin, like Rav Sheshes did, then we're going to wind up trading property. But you're right. If Shimon himself would have preferred to come to Beis Din first if he knew that that was going to be the case, and he just did. It so happens that Reuven came first.
Shalom, which means everyone.
B'shaloi Hein Shomin would mean that we judge Beinonis based on what the person himself owns at the time. Whatever the best is that he owns is considered Idis, even if objectively it's only Beinonis. Okay. Everything else then is considered, everything else is considered Beinonis or Ziboris, even though objectively it's Ziboris. So the Gemara asks, soif, okay, but what's the difference? Who brought the case to Beis Din first? After all, he also the Migbi, when they come to collect, Bahadi Hadori Kaosu, they're coming at the same time. And Tosfos adds, it is true that we listen to the Teveya first, but the Gemara explains in Bava Kamma that does not apply when that's going to cause a loss to, that's not, that, that's not, that not when, the only when only when it's not going to make an extra difference who we listen to first. When you have a case that it describes over there in Baba Kama, where the nitba has reason, where the defendant has reason to be heard out first, where otherwise it's going to cause him a certain loss that he otherwise wouldn't have had, and therefore, in fact, then we do listen to his claims first. So in our case over here, wouldn't Shimon have every right to say, fine, Reuven brought the case first, he's the Tevea. But on the other hand, if you do it the way we're saying, then according to Rav Sheshes, I'm winding up losing out, I'm losing my bainness in favor of his Zeburis. And why should we do that when we could equally well do it the other way around, and I keep my bainness? So Ella, the Gemara says, you're right. Loit Sricha, the Israel Chad Idis of Bainness, the Israel Chad Zeburis. Let's draw out the case a little bit differently. Reuven has only Ziburis, Shimon has Idis and Benis. So now, again, Mar Sova B'Shaloi Hen Shomen, Mar Sova B'Shal Kol Adam Hen Shomen. So again, we have the same machloikas about B'Shaloi Hen Shomen or B'Shal Olam B'Shal Olam Hen Shomen. So now, what we're saying is, so what's going to happen? We're coming at the same time. So now, fine, if we say B'Shaloi Hen Shomen, then no matter what, in other words, Rashi explains, no matter what, the one with the Ziburis, Reuven, who owns only Ziburis, is going to wind up gaining. If Shimon brings the case to Beis Din first, then, and he's collecting Ziburis from Reuven, meanwhile, Reuven, when he claims his debt, is going to be able to claim Beninus, because Shimon, he's going to be able to claim Beninus, because Shimon owns Idis and Beninus. And if Shimon had come to Beis Din first, So one way or the other, either so Reuven is collecting Shimon's Beninus, and he in turn is giving Shimon Ziburis. If we say B'shaloi Hen Shomen, on the other hand, if we say B'shal Olam Hen Shomen, then we say as soon as Reuven has collected the Beninus, then he gives it right back to Shimon, because that is objectively Beninus. So that would be the Machlokas. Okay, now that we understand that Machlokas, let's look at our Mishnah and see how that fits with this machlokas. Again, keeping in mind, it is true the case of the Mishnah is a little bit different, because in the case of the Mishnah of Adman and Chachamim, one of them claims, I don't in fact owe you money. Whereas in Rav Sheshes and Rav Nachman's case, they both agree they owe each other. They just, one of them is saying, maybe it cancels each other out. But so now, let's look at our Mishnah and see. We said, we say the Chachamim say both of them collect. Now, it is true that, so what are we saying? In other words, unlike Admon, who's saying that one of them has a valid claim to say your shtar is forged, because otherwise, why do you borrow money from me when you claim that I already owe money to you, and you should have just had the debt paid back then? The Chum say, no, Zegova for Zegova. In other words, that each one, that we can't say either shtar is forged or paid off or whatever. We have to say both shtaris are valid. And the Mishnah is saying, the Chum say each one collects, which works like Rav Nachman, who said Zegova v'Zegova in his case. How does it fit according to Rav Sheshes? According to Rav Sheshes, once the Chachamim are determining, unlike Adman, that definitely both Shtoris are valid, Hafuchim Atar Talamali, why are we flipping things around? So the answer is Tirgama Rav Nachman, Aliba de Rav Sheshes. Rav Nachman explained how Rav Sheshes would understand this. Maybe this happened after Rav Sheshes passed away, so he wasn't able to explain. Whatever the case, Rav Nachman, speaking on behalf of Rav Sheshes, explains how would Rav Sheshes understand the Mishnah. The case is that the two loans are for different terms. This is what you were mentioning before, Eli, that each one owes for a different number of times. So for a different amount of time. So one of them borrowed for 10 years, where Reuven borrowed for 10 years, Shimon is not entitled to demand the repayment of the debt until 10 years have passed. And the other one borrowed for only 5 years. So the Gemara asks, Hechidami, okay, but what's the scenario? Are we talking about the first loan was taken out for 10 years and then the second loan was taken out for 5? So then, how could Admon say in that case, then why are you borrowing from me when I still owe you money? Of course he is. The time for the payment of the loan is not up yet. He needs money now. So it's natural enough that he's going to borrow money because there's still another 5 years to go of his debt. Ella, no, it means the other way around. It means the first loan was for 5 years. The second one now is for 10. Well, now let's figure out. Well, now we have to ask, if the time for the repayment of the first loan came already, then why are the Chachamim saying that we that Zegoyva Zegoyva? Admin has a valid point. Once 5 years, once the first loan was taken out 5 years ago, and it's due now. So there's nothing of the loan is still due sometime in the future. It's due right now. So it's true. When Shimon comes to Reuben and says, lend me money, why wouldn't Shimon say, it's 5 years, it's time for you to pay off your debt. And as soon as he received the money, he would say that's in payment of the debt. Why would he go and borrow money and write a shtar and so forth? So why would the Chachamim say, Zagoyva Zagoyva? If it's before the 5 years are up, well, hole motazimne, then the time for payment is not up yet. Or my time at the admon. So why would admon say that he could have said that you should have been paid up at the time? It was before the 5 years were up. So what exactly is the scenario? So the answer is loy tzricha de osabahu yoyma de mishlam chomish. So the answer is that he came to borrow money on the very day that the 5 years are over. So Reuben had borrowed money from Shimon 5 years ago. Now is the day when the debt is due, but he has the time till the rest of the day to pay it. As long as he pays it sometime before Shkia, then he hasn't defaulted. Now, earlier on that day, Shimon comes to borrow money from Reuben. So now the machloekas is the mar sava ovid inish the yazif leyoyme. So admon will say so not admon the chachamim will say that it can happen. A person borrows money on that for that day. In other words, he knows that evening he's going to be coming into money, but today, because the other guy is going to pay the debt, but right now he needs money earlier in the day, so therefore he might well do that. Whereas our admon is going to hold, the person's not going to do that. And therefore, if he's borrowing money, we have every right to think that it means that he's not really owed any money by the other guy. Otherwise, he wouldn't just be borrowing on that same day. Which, by the way, you have an interesting point that...
Which seems much more logical than what the Chachamim say.
Each one has their logic, but it is an interesting point, actually. The Baal HaMor and the Baal HaMor and the Mochamis from the Ramban discuss the point, this that we're saying over here, this answer that Rav Nachman is giving, is it needed only according to Rav Sheshes, or is it needed maybe even according to Rav Nachman? Because the Baal HaMor says, you could say, you know what, I have a reason why I borrowed money from you, because ultimately that means, in other words, we said before, we talked about the case where one of them owns only Ziburis and the other one owns Idis and Bainis. So therefore Reuven has the ability to say, you know what, why did I lend you money at that point? Why did I borrow money from you at that point? Actually, is because that way, in the end, it's going to come. In the end, I have a good chance of that resulting in that I'm going to be able to get your Baininess and trade it for my Ziburis. In other words, if you end up defaulting on the loan. So therefore, the Baal HaMor says the whole answer that we're talking about here would be needed only according to Rav Sheshes, who says that we don't do that anyway, because he says that Baininess, we evaluate according to what everybody considers Baininess. So on the other hand, that Ramban disagrees with that. He says, why would a person go through such a convoluted thing? He's going to borrow money in case the other guy defaults. And that way he can end up, if nothing else, that Ramban says, if he wanted to do such a strategy, he doesn't have to go and borrow money from Shimon. He could go and borrow money from Levi, from a third party, and then work it out that way eventually. So therefore the Ramban says that no, the answer over here is actually needed according to both Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Even according to Rav Nachman, that there is going to be cases where Baininess and Ziburis is traded, we still need to discuss whether in fact a person would borrow money with the intention of that later in the day he'll be able to pay it back, but right now he's short of money.
Unless he's been borrowing before and has always had a very good repayment history, so maybe Reuven would accept it this time because of that.
Maybe, but the point is, we're saying, would he say that, or would he say, you know what, on the other hand, the fact is you owe me money and it's due today anyways, pay up. Okay, so that's one answer. Rami Bachama gives a different answer. What we're talking about, the case in the Mishnah, the Machloikas Admon and the Chachamim, is talking about a case of Yisoyim. where one of them died and the Yesomim are coming to Beis Din to claim. Now they don't have karka. It so happens they don't have karka, and the other guy's not going to be able to collect from the Talplin because he can't collect from the Talplin of Yesomim. So Diyasmi Migba Gavi, so the Yesomim are able to collect the debt that was owing to their father, Agbuya Le Magbinin Minayu, but we can't collect from them because in this case they don't have karka. So the Gemara asks, well, Zegovi Vizegovi Katoni. What do you mean? The Mishnah uses the expression, the Chum say each one can collect. According to Rami Bachamah, it comes out one of them is not collecting. Okay, the Gemara says, what it means is Zegovi Vizegroi Ligbos Fe'emoi. Means, sure, based on it's going to say both of you are entitled to collect, but one of you is actually going to be able to do that in practice. The other one is not going to be able to because there's nothing to collect from. But Omar Rava Shtei Chuvas Badaber. But Rava says there are two ways we can refute Rami Bachama's answer. First of all, the Mishnah does say each one can collect. Doesn't say anything about he could have collected, but there's nothing to collect from. So it's mashma that they actually collect in practice. Also, why can't the other guy let him? Fine, I owe your father money. Fine, I'm going to pay with land. I'll give you land. And now he can go when it comes time to collect his debt. He can take it right back from them. Kid Rav Nachman, and that would work out like Rav Nachman says. The Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavur. We had this earlier in the Masechta. Yisoimim should govu karka b'choyvas abihen. It's true that you can't collect from the Tautlin of Yisoimim, but if they have land that they collected in payment of a debt that was owed to their father, Baal Choyv Choyz of a Goysa in Mehen, then a Baal Choyv is able to take that land away from them because it's considered as though they inherited that land from their father. Well, in that case over here, so you have Reuven and Shimon. Shimon died. His Yesomim are claiming that Reuven, you owe us money. Meanwhile, Reuven claimed that your father owed me money too. Fine. So let Shimon's children, the Yesomim, let them take land from Reuven. And then Reuven has recourse right there and he can take that land back. So why would we say Ein loy makom ligbos, that he has no place to collect from?
Not everyone has a collection from the parents that was passed down.
No, not everyone has, but that's the point. Either the Yisraelim have character that they inherited from their parents, and therefore there's what to collect from, or even if they don't, then Reuven has a way of engineering that they should have character, namely that they collect character from him to pay off the debt that he owed their father Shimon, and now he'll come and take it right back for his own debt. So he's not left stuck. So Kasha, Yehuda Gemara says, you're right. Those two points are a Kasha and Rami Bachama's explanation. Again, not a tsuvta, it's not completely refuting it. You can find a way, but nevertheless, it's easier to understand the Mishnah according to the first answer that we're talking about, that the debts are for different amounts of time.
But we're saying here that it's a Kasha. Most people don't have the father have money owed to them. That's being passed
down. No, but the point is, in this particular case, the fact is, in this particular case, there is. So why don't we say that? According to Rami Bachama's answer, it comes out that Reuven, who's trying to collect from the Yesomim, is not going to be able to collect anything. Well, why not? He has a way of engineering that he should be able to collect. So we shouldn't say when we say Zegoiva, we shouldn't say it means one can actually, Shimon's Yesomim can actually collect, but meanwhile Reuven is stuck and has nothing to collect from. In fact, he does have a way to collect just as much
only
as
the father owes money.
Well, yeah, but in that's the case we're talking about over here, where each of them owes the other money. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara asks, well, so what's the problem? The loikma de islu the yasmi ziburis for isla the day idisubainis. Why can't we salvage Rami Bachama's answer and say that we're talking about the Yisomim do have karka, but it's only ziburis? The isla the day idisubainis. Meanwhile, Reuven has idisubainis. So what happens? The as the yasmi govu bainis, the Yisomim are going to go and collect bainis, and then the umagbu lazy boris, when they give Reuven land, they're not going to give him back his bainus that they just took from him, like Reb Nachman's rule. Rather, they would give him ziburis. Because even if we say that the definition of bainus is based on the universal definition of bainus, we don't care what kind of property they have or don't have, as long as they have something which objectively is considered bainus, even if it happens to be the best that they have, we can still collect it from them. That would only apply to the loiva himself. But when we come to collect from Nixi Yesomim, we can collect only from Ziburis. There, the Chachamim did not make the takana that we collect from Beinonis, because then there's no problem with Me'ilas Delas. Nobody's going to avoid lending money on the off chance that the guy might die before he pays it back, and then I can only collect the Buddhists from the Yisayim. Nobody's going to worry about that. And therefore, the halacha is, the Chachamim left it the way it was in Torah, that you collect only the Buddhists. So you do have a case where Rami Bachama's case would work, seemingly. What you would have is the Yisayimim collect Beinonis from Reuven, and they wind up giving him Ziburis, because that's all, even if we say B'shokol Adam Hein Shamin, they don't have to give him back his Beinonis. They only have to give him Ziburis, because that's all you can collect from Nichsi Yisayimim. So we actually have a case then where it would work out when there are Yisayimim involved. So why don't we use that as part of Rami Bachama's answer?
And it also depends who comes to Bezin first, also probably.
Maybe, but the point is that the point is we have a way that the case can work out. The answer is, though, the Gemara says no, because Hanimili Hechidolei Tofas. That would apply only where the other guy wasn't Tofas, where now he's coming to collect, where we would say he's entitled only to collect Ziburis from Yisayim. Aval Hecha the Tofas, but where he previously grabbed property that was Beinonis, then Tofas, then we say that he can keep it. In this case, in other words, we would say, because he has Beinonis and he's entitled to collect from the Yisayimim, because again, the Yisayimim agree that the shtar is valid, that Reuven's shtar is valid, and they're not claiming it was paid off or anything, so therefore he already is in possession of Beinonis. So we wouldn't take away his Beinonis and then return him Ziburis from the Yisayimim. Rather, if we said Fokimatau to Lomali, we would say that we leave well enough alone. We would say that he keeps his Beinonis in payment of the debt that he's saying that their father owed him. So therefore, it would come out that Rami Bachama's answer still doesn't work, because there's nothing to be gained by that. Each one is going to wind up keeping the property that they do, and therefore there'd be no Zegoyva Zegoyva.
So this was the last machlokes.
So this was the last machlokes of Admon and the Chachamim.
Admon says that you do what?
So Admon says again that in the case where one of them claims you owe me, that each of them claims you owe me money, and one of them is claiming to the other, no, I don't. Then Admon is saying that the one who came second has a valid claim, or the one Admon says that one of them has a valid claim. If I really owed you money, why'd you borrow money from me? And the Chum are saying that no. So here's where also you have in that machloikas of the Baal Amor and the Ramban that we mentioned before, the Ramban says that basically this is the same machloikas as the previous Mishnah. And the reason why it's repeating and mentioning the same point is because now we have this point, Zegoyva Shtar Choyva, that we didn't have in the previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, we had one of them is owed a debt and the other one sold land. Here we have where each one of them is claiming a debt. And again, you have cases where you are actually going to have to deal with both claims and based in and take away property from one to satisfy the other and vice versa. Okay, Mishnah says, Sholosh
HaRotzes. But the only time that you can exchange Ziburis instead of Beinonis is for Yisayimim. There's no other case.
No, so that's the thing. We slugged up Rami Bachama's answer. We said that in that particular case, you wouldn't really have the scenario of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah suggests that each one of them can collect, meaning that there is what to be collected. And in Rami Bachama's scenario involving Yisayimim, there actually wouldn't be anything to collect. Either there wouldn't be anything to collect because the Yisayimim have no karka at all, or if you're going to collect, you're going to collect right back what you got from them, what you gave them, and therefore you're not really gaining anything anyway. No, we left off with the answer that we're talking about, that in fact, the loans were for different amounts of time. And we said the question is whether a person would borrow short term like that on the day that another loan is due to be paid. We did also mention this point about trading. So you could have, okay, if we say, then yes, you can have a case where Beinonis and Ziburis end up getting traded. If you say b'shokol adam hein shamin, then you would say that not, because the Beinonis is just going to end up going back and forth anyway. When you have machlokas Reb Nachman and another Amora, usually the halacha is like Reb Nachman, and so it is over here. So in this case, we would in fact say there does end up being a trade of Beinonis for Ziburis.
But that, in general, can you? When someone has a debt, when two people have a debt against each other, is there such a possibility that one would get Beinonis and then the one
that's
would get Ziburis?
According to Reb Nachman, sure. It could happen, yeah.
Okay. No, but outside of the case of Yesomim.
Outside of that, no, for we didn't know. Yesomim was only appointed on the Rami Bacham. No, even in a regular case where both of them are still alive, yes, appointed of Nachman, you can wind up that Baininess and Id and Ziburis getting get traded in certain cases, yes.
Depending on
Who started with Baininess and who started with Ziburis, etc. Yeah.
Where does he get it from?
What do you mean, where does he get it from? Because we know that a Baal Choy can be paid from Baininess, and we know if we say, as the Gemara discusses in Baba Kama, that the Shaloi Hein Shaman, that the definition of Baininess varies according to what the guy owns, then practically speaking, that's how you're going to come out. All right, let's go on. The Mishnah says, Sholosh Arotzes L'Nisuin. There are three regions of Eretz Yisrael regarding dinim of marriage: Yehuda, Be'er HaYarden, VeHagolan. There's an interesting discussion whether Eber HaYarden for this purpose means what we usually think of as Eber HaYarden, which nowadays is in Jordan, or does it mean maybe this side of the Yarden, meaning the center of Eretz Yisrael, between Yehuda and the Gola. Anyway, the point is, what's the relevance of there being different lands? Meaning, suppose that a couple got married. In one of those lands, the husband lives in one of those lands. He married a wife from one of those regions. He married a wife from a different region. He can't. So you're going to have the dinim that he can't necessarily force her to go move with him to that other region because that's where he lives. So a man from Yehuda marries a wife from the Galil. He can't necessarily say, well, you know what? Now that we're married, you have to come with me to Yehuda and live there. Rather, we might say she's entitled to say, you know what? I want to live where I want to live where I grew up, where I'm comfortable. No, but he has to give parnosa, sure. But we can also say that she would be comfortable where she grew up. So you have dinim about, and by the way, this din doesn't apply just to Eretz Yisrael. It applies in the rest of the world as well. The Mishnah is mentioning Eretz Yisrael because that's where the Mishnayos were composed. But the concept would apply to the rest of the world as well.
If he's from Eretz Yisrael and she's from Chutz Aretz,
we're going to talk about Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Aretz in a minute. So halt cup, just a second. We're also starting to run short of time, so let's get moving. So the Mishnah says, "Ein mitzien mi'ir le'ir mikrach le'krach." A husband does not have the right to force his wife within one region itself to move across different regions. We're talking about he doesn't have the right across different regions if they were living in a medium-sized city and he wants to move. To an equal sized city in a different country. Even though it's from small city to small city, from big city to big city, so you could say it's the same size city. What's the problem? But still, it's in different regions. Therefore, he doesn't have the ability to do that. She was born in this country. She was born in Galil. He doesn't have the right to force. So now that we got married, you have to move with me to Yehuda. If she doesn't want to, then she has a valid claim for divorce and to collect her ksuba. But within the same region, if they both come from Yehuda, for example, then he has the right to force her to move from one medium city to another medium city, or from one big city to another big city, because they're all within the same region. Yes, it's a different city, but it's not so bad. It's still the region of the world where she's used to. But he can't force her to move from a small city to a big city, or vice versa, as we're going to explain in the Gemara. Also, he can make her move from a bad area to a good area. A bad area could be an area where there are shortages, for example, where it's hard, where food is more expensive. A nova hayofa then would be one where food is cheaper. Avalemi nova hayofa, the nova hara, but not the other way around, from a better place to a worse place. Reb Shimon Gamliel, aflemi nova hara, the nova hayofa. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, actually, he can't force her to move from a bad place to a good place either, even though you'd think that's better. What's the problem? Because living in a nice place tests a person, as the Gemara is going to say, it tests a person's health. It causes a person to get sick, the change of routine. which, by the way, the Rambam has a different explanation about it. He says when you live in a nicer place, he says Nova Yofa can also mean like a nicer city, like a higher quality where richer people live or whatever. And therefore, he says what happens is now a person feels like they have to keep up with the neighbors, they have to dress more nicely, they have to whatever, they have to keep up their appearances better, and therefore she may not want to have to bother with that, as opposed to in a Nova Hara where she can be she doesn't have to be so worried about her appearance all the time. Okay, so the Gemara asks, "Bishleim mikrach le'ir," which, by the way, there is a good deal of discussion in the Rishonim and in Shulchan Aruch about certain ins and outs of this. In particular, we're talking about what the husband can force the wife. Is there ever any din the other way around? So, are there cases where the wife can force the husband to move from point A to point B? Here we have, they married, one's from Yehuda, one's from the Galil. We're saying the husband can't force the wife to move to Yehuda. Does the wife have a valid claim to say, in that case, you move to the Galil and live with me over here? Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Bishlem mikrach le'ir." I understand why you wouldn't want to move from a big city to a small city. Because in a big city, you can find anything. You go to the supermarket, you can find anything on the shelves. In a small town, you may not be able to find everything that you want to get. What's wrong with going from a small city to a big city that the Mishnah is saying the husband can't force the issue? The answer is Mesaila Rav Yosi Bar Chanina. The answer is Bar Chanina. The answer is the fact that the Mishnah says that you can't supports what Rav Yosi Bar Chanina says. The Amr Rav Yosi Bar Chanina, minayin sheyishivas krakim kosher. How do we know that living in big cities is hard on a person? Because, as Rashi says, it's crowded. The houses are one on top of the other. You have no fresh air. So how do we know that? Shenemar, you have a pasuk in Nehemiah. So it describes over there when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash and to resettle Yerushalayim, they found that the city of Yerushalayim, the walls were rebuilt, but they needed people to live in the city. So the pasuk can describe over there that they made a girdle and they said that certain people are gonna live in Yerushalayim. And then the pasuk says, "Vayivorchu am l'chol ha'anoshim amisnadim l'shavas b'Yerushalayim." The people gave a bracha to all the people who volunteered to live in Yerushalayim. So we see, first of all, the fact that people had to volunteer shows that it's difficult. And second of all, the fact that they gave him a special bracha also shows it's difficult. So in other words, like this, people might have said, "Why should I bother living in the big city of Yerushalayim when it would be much, much healthier and everything to live in a small village someplace?" Now, it's Israel, the fact that people were volunteering to repopulate Yerushalayim and the fact that gave them a bracha shows that yeshivas krak in kosher. So therefore, that's what we're saying in the Mishnah, that if they the husband can't force his wife to move from a small city to a big city because a big city is much more crowded and less helpful and more pressure and all. Yeah.
Okay. So with that logic, you would say that anytime it's better to move to Yerushalayim than to another place in Eretz
Yerushalayim. We're going to talk about in the next mission, actually. Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz Laaretz, and Yerushalayim versus the rest of Eretz Yisrael are a special case. The Gemara is just bringing a proof that living in a big city such as Yerushalayim is harder on a person than living in a small town. So in other words, each one has its advantages. The big city has the advantages that you can find everything you can possibly want. And the small towns have the advantage that the air is better and it's less crowded. That, which is why the Mishnah is saying you can't force a move from one to the other. Now, the Mishnah had said, Reb Shimon Gamliel said that even to move from another Ra to another Yafa, even to move to a nicer place, to a place where things are in greater supply, where prices are cheaper, where whatever is no good, he can't force it because the Nava Yafa Boidik. So my Boidik, what do we mean? It tests a person, means Kiddushmur. It means like what Shmuel said. Shmuel says that a change in routine is the beginning of a stomachache. So in other words, like this, when a person is moving to a different place, and even they're moving to a nicer place, but it's a change of routine, and therefore it can undermine their health. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions Kosev B'Sefer Ben Sira. It says in Sefer Ben Sira, which is a Sefer from the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, the author was actually a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. He wrote a Sefer. Much of it is in the style of Mishlei. Much of it is it's a very literary, poetic Sefer. It wasn't written with Ruach Kodesh. It's not considered part of Tanakh, but the Gemara often quotes it. The Gemara often quotes Mili Malius, good, positive statements from it. So here's one. The pasuk in Mishlei that Shlomo HaMelech wrote says, "Kol yamei oni roim," all the days of the poor person are bad. So you have to ask, "Ikar shabbosos v'yamim tovim." So Ben Sid asks, what about Shabbos and Yom Tov? A poor person eats better food on those days. And the answer is Kiddush Shmuel. The answer now, we understand, based on what Shmuel said, Da'ama Shmuel, Shinu Vest, Tchilas Choyle Me'ayim, that beginning, that a change of routine causes a stomach ache. And that's what we mean. In other words, so now the poor person, the whole week, he doesn't have decent food to eat. Now on Shabbos, all of a sudden, he has better food. That itself causes him problems. So therefore, we can really say, Kol Yimei Oniroi. There is, by the way, a vote from the Mizrachi Maggid on a deeper level. He says the vote is the Oni over here is a person who doesn't have proper kavana and davening. So Kol Yimei Oni Roim, all his days are bad. So he asks, what about Shabbos and Yom Tov? Doesn't he have more time to have kavana and davening? Isn't that at least a positive? And the answer is yes, but that causes Chol Yimei Ayim, namely that now he becomes a Baal Gaiva. He thinks to himself, wow, what a great guy I am that I had such kavana. So therefore, it's not really any better. Yeah. Okay. Another thing that Ben Sira says, Ben Sido Ema Af Leilos. Now the Pasuk had said, Kol Yimei Oniroim, all the days of the poor person are bad. Ben Sido adds, not only the days, also the nights. Because Bishval Gagin Gagoy, this poor person, his roof is lower than all the other roofs in town because he can't afford a taller house. Over Miroim Horim Kamei, and his vineyard is at the top of the mountains because again, the land is worse over there, and that's the only place we can afford to buy a vineyard. Is at the top of a hill. Therefore, Mimitar Gagan Lagagri, so the rain from all the other roofs runs off onto his roof, or Ma'afar Kamer the Krumim, and all the dust, all the topsoil from his vineyard ends up getting washed down to the lower elevations by the rains, and therefore he winds, even by night then, the rain is dripping onto his roof, and even by night, the winds are carrying away topsoil from his vineyard that's at the top of the mountain, and therefore he ends up the worse off. Okay. Mishnah says, the last Mishnah of the Masechta, Hakol Malim LaEretz Yisrael V'ein Hakol Metziyim. Anybody can force his family to move to Eretz Yisrael, Lawless, to go up to Eretz Yisrael, V'ein Hakol Metziyim, but not everybody is able to force somebody to leave Eretz Yisrael. So before we were talking about within Eretz Yisrael itself, or within Chutz La'aretz itself, here we're talking about to move from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. If one member, as we're going to discuss in the Gemara, if the husband wants, but if one member of the family wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, then that can force that all the rest of them do so, but not the other way around. Similarly, Hakol Malim Yerushalayim and Hakol Metziyim. Similarly, when it comes to moving from the rest of Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim, everybody can force that move, but not the other way around. Echad HaNoshim VeEchad HaNoshim. Here it applies to both the men and the women. Meaning that if the wife wants to move to Eretz Yisrael and the husband doesn't, then she has a valid claim and saying it's not Yotzi V'Yitzim Ksuba. Then she has a valid claim for divorce and to collect her Ksuba. As opposed to in the previous Mishnah, where, for example, if she was born in the Galil, if she grew up in the Galil and he grew up in Yehuda, and he wants to move to Yehuda and she doesn't, then he has the right to divorce her without Ksuba. Here we're saying, on the other hand, that if she wants to move to Yerushalayim and he doesn't, then she has the right to a divorce with Ksuba. Continues the Mishnah, Nosi Isha Be'Eretz Yisrael, the Gerusha Be'Eretz Yisrael. If a couple got married in Eretz Yisrael and divorced in Eretz Yisrael, Noisim L'Mimois Eretz Yisrael, the Ksuba is paid out of Eretz Yisrael money. Now, as we're going to explain, the coins in Eretz Yisrael were lower weight than in other places. You'd have the same denomination, but the weight was less in Eretz Yisrael for the same denomination than it was in other places. So therefore, he gives a Mois Eretz Yisrael. Now, there's not much of a chiddush in that. The Shittim of Kubetzes explains that the Chiddush is even, let's say, that they were planning to move someplace else, but the fact is they got married and divorced in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore that's what we do. On the other hand, Nosa Isha Be'Eretz Yisrael V'Gerusha B'Kaputkia. Suppose they got married in Eretz Yisrael and divorced in Kaputkia. Kaputkia is, there's different opinions. There's an area in what's nowadays Turkey called Cappadocia, so it might be that. It's an area in modern Turkey. Some say that's the island of Kaftor. Some say that's Kaftor, which some say is the island of Crete in the Mediterranean. It actually connects with this week's parasha because we have the descendants, we have the 70 nations listed in this week's parasha, and you have Plishtim Ves Kaftorim, and one translation of Kaftorim in Targum is Kaputkori. Anyway, the coins in Kaputkia were heavier than the ones in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, Noisim L'Mimois Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, because they got married and he took on the Shibur in Eretz Yisrael, he can pay her with Eretz Yisrael coins. Nosi Isha Kaputki of Gerusha Eretz Yisrael, what if they got married in Kaputki and divorced in Eretz Yisrael? Also, Noisim L'Mimois Eretz Yisrael, he only has to give her coins of Eretz Yisrael. The Shibur was taken on in a place where the coins are heavier. Nevertheless, he can get away with giving her the lighter coins of Eretz Yisrael. But Reb Shimon Gamliel, Noisim L'Mimois Kaputki. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that he has to give her kaputkia money because, as we're going to say in the Gemara, he holds that the ksuba is daraisa, and therefore that we can't be makel in it. Therefore, we have to go according to where he took on the shibud. And the final case, nasa isha b'kaputkia, b'gerusha b'kaputkia, if they got married and divorced in kaputkia, nasa mamu is kaputkia, then he gives her kaputkia money. There's no question about that because both the shibud and the payment took place in a place with a heavier point.
In the previous case, can he give us more money or salt to make up for the
difference? It's not a matter of more money. The point is, in other words, he wrote in the ksuba, let's say, that he's going to pay her 200 zuz. 200 zuz of what weight? Does he have to give her 200 of the heavier zuzim, or can he give her 200 of the lighter zuzim?
Well, I understand, because the kaputkia were heavy ones, instead of giving 200, you have to give 220.
No. That's not the point. In the ksuba, it doesn't say what denomination. Think of it in modern terms, for example. Imagine we say, for example, I owe you $100. Is that 100 American dollars or 100 Canadian dollars or 100 Australian dollars or what have you? So therefore, in other words, here it just says zuzim, doesn't say what kind of zuzim. Therefore, he can get away, unless everything took place in kaputkia, then the Tanakhama says he can get away with paying the cheaper coins, which nowadays would be the equivalent of, say, paying $100 and $100 Australian rather than $100 American. Whereas Rav Shimon Gamliel says that not necessarily. It depends where the shibud was taken on. Okay, so the Gemara says, Hakol Malin Lasuyamai, when we say anybody can force a move to Eretz Yisrael, what does that come to include? Lasuya Avodim, it comes to include Avodim. Rashi says it means an Eved Ivri. So suppose a person has an Eved Ivri, and the Eved Ivri wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, then that can force that the family moves to Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam, and some other Rishonim explain, or the other way around, actually, Rashi says it means that if a person wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, then his Eved Ivri has to follow him whether he likes it or not. That's what it means, Vasuya Avodim. According to the Rambam, actually, it includes even Avodim Knanim. If an Eved Knani wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, then he can say, Tosfos also mentions this point, maybe, Tosfos mentions it actually later in the Sugya, whatever, that if the Eved Knani wants to move to Eretz Yisrael, then he can say to his master, either we move the whole family to Eretz Yisrael with me, or you have to free me. Or you have to sell me to somebody in Eretz Yisrael. So that's last two Yavodim. So the Gemara asked, well, man, the Tony
Yavodim. And would have him?
What?
Would have to free him then?
So then either I'd have to free him, or you'd have to sell him to somebody else who's gonna take him to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara asked, well, man, the Tony Yavodim behedya. Okay, what about there is a Tana who actually teaches the word Avodim explicitly in our Mishnah? So then, Lasuyamai, then what does the Hakol of our Mishnah come to include? And the answer is Lasuyamai, Nova HaYofa, Nova HaRa. It comes to include if you're moving from a nicer place to a worse place, where we said in the previous Mishnah that you can't force that, but if the nicer place was in Chutz La'aretz and the worse place is in Eretz Yisrael, then the husband or the wife can still force that move. Because there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. And the Eina Kol Mitzia and Lasuya Mai, when we said not everybody can take out from Eretz Yisrael, what does that come to include? Lasuya Eved Shebarach Mechutz La'aretz La'aretz. It means if an Eved Knani escapes from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, the Aminalei Zabnei Hocha Bezil, so we tell the master, you sell him here in Eretz Yisrael, and then go, then you can go back to Chutz La'aretz, Mishum Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, because after all, there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, this
Eved,
no, but an Eved Knani is chayiv in some mitzvahs. He's chayiv in some mitzvahs, like Jewish women. So therefore, we can tell him that he has the right to argue that. In fact, Tosfos says, that Zabnei Hocha may not even mean sell him to somebody else. It may even mean free him and he'll owe you the money because he wants to be a free yid and live in Eretz Yisrael. And there is, in fact, a pasuk in Parashas Ki Tzeitzei. It says, Lo Saskiu Eved Al Adono, don't return, don't bring back a servant to a slave to his master, Asher Yinotzei Lelechem Im Adono, where he escapes to you from his master, where the Gemara in Gittin explains that that's talking about an Eved who escapes from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, you can't necessarily return him to his master in Chutz La'aretz. He wants to live in Eretz Yisrael, so you have to give him that. So Tosfos is discussing, again, does that mean that we can tell the master you have to sell him to somebody else? Or does it mean even that we tell him you have to free him and you're selling him to himself, in other words, in effect. You're going to be owed. He's going to owe you the money for his freedom.
Or he has a choice to move there.
Well, that's what we're saying. He wants to move to Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah. But the family
could also. Then we said, HaKol Mal Yerushalayim La'asu Yimai. When we say everybody can bring up to Yerushalayim, what does that come to include? It means again, La'asu Yimai, Nova HaYofa, Nova HaRa. It means even from a good neighborhood to a bad neighborhood. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim still outweighs what kind of neighborhood it is. So therefore, if one of them wants to move, then he can force the other one. And Ve'ein HaKol Metziyan La'asu Yimai means La'asu Yafilim Nova HaYofa, La'ra La'Nova HaYofa. Means even if you're going from a bad neighborhood to a good neighborhood, you're living in a bad neighborhood in Yerushalayim, you want to move to a good neighborhood. neighborhood someplace else in Eretz Yisrael, then the other one can block that and say, I want to stay in Yerushalayim because it's greater Kedusha. But I did Tana Reisha, Ein Metzien, Tana Nesefa Nami, Ein Metzien. And since the Reisha had to mention the word Ein Metzien in the case of Eretz Yisrael versus Chutz Laaretz, where we said in connection with the Eved, then in the Sefa also uses the word Ein Metzien, even though that's not strictly necessary. Tosfos explains, by the way, that we didn't mention anything about Avodim when it comes to Yerushalayim. As a matter of fact, we really don't want that there should be any more Avodim than necessary in Yerushalayim. We want the people of Yerushalayim as much as possible to be Miyuchosim. And an Eved does not have Yichus. So therefore, the Gemara did not mention that point about an Eved wanting to live in Yerushalayim, because in fact, that wouldn't be relevant. So we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with these dinim, and we're going to also talk about to what extent does this mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, living in Yerushalayim, apply nowadays when we don't have a Bez Mikdash, and so forth. So we'll talk about that more tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Shkoyach, everyone.
But the Gemara here doesn't seem to make any inference about
it doesn't. We'll talk about it tomorrow. We'll talk about something that Tosfos says in that connection tomorrow, Bez Hashem.